Repeat after me. Namo Gaura Kishoraya. Shakshad Vairagya Murtaye. Viparlamba Rasambode. Kadambu Jayate Namaha. Namo Gaura Kishoraya. Sakshad Vairagya Murtaye. Viparlamba Rasambode. Padambu Jayate Namaha. Namo Gaura Kishoraya. Sakshad Vairagya Murtaye. Viparlamba Rasambode. Padambu Jayate Namaha. I offer my respectful obeisances unto Gaura Kishora Das Babaji Maharaj, the spiritual master of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, who is renunciation personified. He is always merged in a feeling of separation and intense love of Krishna. So a little bit about the life of Gaura Kishora Das Babaji Maharaj. I know that, and as his pranam mantra indicates, renunciation is very prominent in this personality. But when I first heard about some of the things of his earlier life, I guess just the fact that he was married was surprising. But in 1849, Srila Gaura Kishora Das Babaji, he left grihastha life after the death of his wife. And he moved to Vrindavan there and took an initiation from Sri Bhagavat Das Babaji, a disciple of Sri Jagannath Das Babaji. And does anybody know how many years he lived in Vrindavan? This is another thing that surprised me, that he lived in Vrindavan now, is because he's so closely associated with Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur and Bhaktivinoda Thakur. I always thought of him sort of permanently placed in Navadvip, but he lived in Vrindavan. Does anybody know how many years he lived in Vrindavan? For 30 years he lived in Vrindavan. He chanted 200,000 names of Krishna every day, which was 128 rounds of japa. 128 rounds of japa, 200,000 names of Krishna every day. This is how he would perform his bhajan, wandering throughout the 12 forests of Vrindavan. While staying in Vrindavan, he made a flower garland every day for Rai and Kanu, Radha Krishna. After 30 years of rendering intimate services to Radha and Krishna in Vrindavan, Babaji felt inspired by the divine couple to see Navadvip Dham. And so he went from Vrindavan to Navadvip. He always carried two books with him, by Srila Narottam Das Thakur, Praharthana and Prema Bhakti Chandrika. And since this is Ekadasi, a little note about how he observed Ekadasi. On Ekadasi, he didn't eat or drink a drop of water, recognizing him to be a Mahabhagavat that many tried to serve, but he never accepted. So one thing we do know is he regularly associated in her Srimad Bhagavatam from Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Savana Sukara Kunja in Godrumadweep. We've all heard the famous pastime of how he took up a residence near a latrine. And why did he do that? He didn't want mundane, materialistic people bothering him. So for 6 months, he lived there. And finally, the public officials came offering to build a proper kutir for him. after his stay there. Okay, the essence of Srila Gorkhadas Kishoredas Babaji's instructions. The divine name of Krishna offers one and only shelter, the one and only shelter. One should never try to remember Radha Damodara's transcendental pastimes by artificial methods. Constant chanting of the divine name will purify the heart. By chanting Harinam, the syllables of the Maha Mantra, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare, will gradually reveal the spiritual form, qualities, pastimes of Sri Krishna. Then you will realize your own spiritual, eternal spiritual form, service, and the 11 particulars of your spiritual identity. Does anybody know what those 11 particulars of your spiritual identity are? I don't either, but I'm sure it can be researched. So what was the essence of Gorkhadas Babaji's instructions? Constant chanting the holy name of the Lord. On 19 November 2015, Srila Gorkhadas Babaji Maharaj joined the eternal blissful pastimes of Gandharvika Giridhari. His beloved disciple, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, establishes his samadhi on the bank of Sri Chaitanya Math's Radha Kund near Lord Chaitanya's Yoga Peak in Sridham, Mayapur. Has everybody been there? Everybody got a chance to visit the Samadhi Mandir? It's very beautiful. Small, but very beautiful. Especially the Murti. I think the Murti is like made of white marble or something like that. Very beautiful Murti. Of course, there was a whole controversy about that, and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur struggles with the Babaji's in Navadvip about placing him in samadhi, but we'll save that for another day. Srila Gorkhadas Babaji Maharaj ki. So we'll go on to Srimad Bhagavatam. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So this morning we're reading from the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 2, Divinity and Divine Service. Text number 9. Dharma sya hi apavarga sya narto ratayopakalpate nartasya dharmatas kantasya kamo labhaya hi smritaha. Please chant. Natasya dharma kantasya kamolabhaya hi smitaha.
Dharmasya hi apavargasya
Dharmasya hyaparagasya Nato ratuya katao pate Nato sya dhammakantasya Kamula bhaya hisnitaha Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Well, let's do the word meanings. Dharmasya, occupational engagements. He, certainly, apavargasya, ultimate liberation. Na, not. Artha, end. Artasya, for material gain. Upakalpate, is meant for. Na, neither. Artasya, of material gain. Dharma, eka. Antasya, for one who is engaged in the ultimate occupational service, kama, sense gratification, labhaya, attainment of, he exactly, smritaha, is described by the great sages. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. All occupational engagements are certainly meant for ultimate liberation. They should never be performed for material gain. Furthermore, according to the sages, one who is engaged in the ultimate occupational service should never use material gain to cultivate sense gratification. Report. We have already discussed that pure devotional service to the Lord is automatically followed by perfect knowledge and detachment from material existence. But there are others who consider that all kinds of different occupational engagements, including those of religion, are meant for material gain. The general tendency of any ordinary man in any part of the world is to gain some material profit in exchange for religious or other occupational service. Even in the Vedic literatures, for all sorts of religious performances, an allurement of material gain is offered, and most people are attracted by such allurements or blessings of religiosity. Why are so-called men of religion allured by material gain? Because material gain can enable one to fulfill desires, which in turn satisfy sense gratification. This cycle of occupational engagements includes so-called religiosity followed by material gain, and material gain followed by fulfillment of desires. Sense gratification is the general way for all sorts of occupied men. But, in the statement of Sutta Goswami, as per the verdict of Srimad Bhagavatam, this is nullified by the present shloka. One should not engage himself in any sort of occupational service for material gain only, nor should material gain be utilized for sense gratification. How material gain should be utilized is described as follows. Om Ajnana Timurandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namah. It's amazing how tightly composed the Srimad Bhagavatam is. Here we're getting instruction about answers to the questions of the sages, and many of the speakers, including yesterday, referenced that orientation that this section of the Bhagavatam has. The questions by the sages and how they've begun to be answered by Sukadev Goswami, or Sutta Goswami, I think. It's Sutta Goswami speaking here, is that correct? So how they're answered by Sutta Goswami. Just an example, the sages are recommending, they've been asked about, they're asking about the ultimate good. What's the most ultimate good for conditioned souls in this material world. And from there, you can look back to the first verse of the Bhagavatam, where it talks about Atato Brahma Jignasa. Now is the time to inquire into this. Inquire into what? Well, what is the ultimate good? And so looking back from the question by the sage, we see this idea of why the Bhagavatam exists, what its purpose is, to fulfill what can be achieved now. And if we look forward from this question by the sages, look forward even all the way to the seventh canto, we find in the instructions of Pallad Maharaj, when he's first beginning his instructions, the Komaracharit Pragno verse, there he talks about human life being adruvam and artadam. Adruvam means that this material life is temporary. And so, atato brahma jignasa, now inquire about what? Inquire about the ultimate good. Adruvam and artadam. Artadam is full of meaning. This human form of life is full of meaning. And that should be taken advantage of. It's not that life is without meaning. It's purposeful. It's driven purposefully, life. And so, purposefully for what is the question? And so the answer to that question of what, purposely what, often involves, particularly in this initial second chapter of the first canto, involves the question about what is Dharma. Actually, this is picking up, Bhagavatam's picking up from where the Mahabharata left off, because in the Mahabharata, essentially, that work, all 100,000 verses of that work, deal with this subject about what is Dharma. Time and time again, circumstances arise, and the question is, what is Dharma? The most, probably the most famous, or the one that stands out in our mind the most, is when Draupadi was dragged into the assembly, the vicious assembly, Prabhupada calls it, and an attempt was made to strip her naked. She asked, you know, was this right? She asked a question about Dharma. Is Dharma being followed here? And given the complex nature of Dharma, even Bhishmadev couldn't say, according to the rules of Dharma, couldn't say whether Dharma was present in the assembly or Dharma had left the assembly. And so this question of Dharma, again, is central to Mahabharata. And Srimad Bhagavatam picks up where that left off. And all these questions about what's the ultimate good sort of focus on Dharma. What is Dharma? What is the Dharma of the living being? What's the best way to act? And so we find that even here in the verse today, all occupational engagements are certainly meant for ultimate liberation. And the word occupational engagements, dharmasya. So again, it's a question of dharma. Actually, behind this question of dharma is the fact that impersonalism is being rejected. We know that's also being rejected from the Bhagavatam. Any impersonal conception. And when you think about it, it's actually impersonalism to think that this life is anything other than purposefully driven, and that one should seek out Dharma, seek out what is the best action to do, or seek out what any action is to do. This idea that we have no duty, we come into this world and we have no duty, is it's impersonalism. I recently was in South India, and I went to the Sri Venkateshwara temple, saw Balaji Didi. I had a very nice darshan, actually, right up front for a couple of minutes, which is rare. I mean, generally, you know, you have to keep moving. But the temple there requested and was given the opportunity to have the GBC members could have special darshan. The last time this happened, somehow or another, I got told I couldn't go with the GBC. They said, you stay here. Everyone else went, and I didn't get a chance to go with them, get a close-up darshan. So this time I was right up at the front, and I was right there next to Balaji, so I got a good darshan. He has an interesting smile, by the way, just on the side. His smile is very rounded. You see how Radhasham Sundar, they have a mild smile, subtle smile, but he has a you know, if you draw like a round U-shaped smile. But Balaji Didi, you know, he's a four-handed Vishnu. He has four hands. Yeah. And even Vishnu has something to do with his hands. It's sort of impersonal to think that we're born into this world empty-handed or something like that. Our hands are full, actually. Even Vishnu's hands are full. And the Balaji deity is distinctive, especially the two lower hands that you can see on the deity. One of them is with his palm, his arm bent like this, and his palm giving blessings like that. The other one is extended, but it curves around, and his hand is like this. They're generally covered with gold and diamonds, so they're easy to see. And his other two hands, where he has the conch and the disc, are not so plain to see. You just see the conch and the disc. But he's got a purpose to all. Even Vishnu's got a purpose for his hands. You know, it's not that he's doing nothing and idly sitting by wondering what to do with his hands or something like that. He has his conch and his disc, which we know. One is the protector of the devotees, the other is the benefactor of the devotees. Who got the conch shell mercy from Lord Vishnu? Dhruva Maharaj, right? He couldn't speak anything, but then the Lord touched him with his conch shell, and he was able to offer so many beautiful prayers. And of course, Sudarshan Chakra protects the devotees. The hand that's offering benedictions, that's easy to see on the deity, there's a description here of what he's doing. Let's see if I can see. The right hand is pointing to his right feet, which means he is pointing to the Bhagavad Gita verse, Sarvadhammam Parityajamamaikam Saradham Vajam. He's telling people to surrender to his lotus feet. So he's pointing with his hand, with an open hand, to his feet. Take shelter of me. His other hand, let's see, the left hand, it's below his hip or waist, and means, once you surrender, I will take care of you from now on. And when you cross the ocean of samsara, the ocean of happiness and distress, the ocean will be kept below your knee length. So he's indicating by his position of his hand that the material ocean will only come up so far. It won't drown you. It may come up to your knees only. But the point is that Vishnu in this way maintains the universe, and it's said that he maintains Dharma. So Dharma again is prominent. The cosmic order is maintained by Lord Vishnu, and of course there's a question about whether it's his Dharma or it's his mercy. I think in Bhagavad Gita Krishna says, I don't have any Dharma, but he does these things. Why? Why does he have the symbols in his upper hands and point to his feet asking you to surrender? Because he is encouraging us to take advantage of Dharma. It's his mercy, actually. It's not his obligation like his Dharma. It's his mercy that he's making himself available to us, even in this material world. So what that means is that we, who are different from him, we need to take advantage of Dharma in a way that helps us solve all the problems of life. Now, the problems of life are embedded in the verse that we're reading today in a very interesting series of explanations that Srila Prabhupada gives. Maybe you're familiar with his recitation of the Pavargas, where he talks about pa, pa, ba, ma, ma, where he describes material life. He describes in this verse, dharmasya hi pavargasya. Apavargasya means ultimate liberation. So pavarga means material life. Apavarga, ultimate liberation. Pavarga, material life. And so dharma is what one should take advantage of to get apavargasya, or liberation. So dharma then deals with five things. And Prabhupada quotes from the Sanskrit grammar, vargas, pavarga, kavarga, chavarga, tavarga, like that. If you look in the Sanskrit pronunciation guide in the back of the Bhagavatam, you'll find this progression of how you pronounce Sanskrit. And it involves moving your tongue around different places in your mouth. That's basically how the pronunciation. Some pronunciation is done with the lips together, pa, and others, ba. And obviously, I'm not very expert at pronouncing Sanskrit, but how you move your tongue around to pronounce these consonants in the Sanskrit language also has a meaning. So, vargas, they're called vargas. And so, pavarga has a meaning, because it describes material life, and Prabhupada explains it. Pa means parishrama, hard labor. So the first pa with the lips, pa, represents parishrama, hard labor. This material world, you have to work hard. Either you are a human being or a hog or a dog or a cat, it doesn't matter. You have to work. Now, has everyone experienced that? We're mainly a grihastha community. We know that you have to work hard somehow or another. So this is a symptom of material life. And so after that, the next progression is, this is pa-pa. So foam will come to your mouth, pa, from working so hard. Again, material life. Then, ba. Ba means vyartata, baffledness. Bewilderment may be another word. Material life has a very bewildering effect on us. And so, that's a symptom. Pa, pa, ba. And then, pa, with a B-H-A, means bhaya, or fearfulness. And so not only do we have to work very hard in material life, and we're baffled. We foam at the mouth and we're baffled by that. But then we're very fearful. What'll happen next? What'll happen next? And then finally, ma, or mrityu, which means what? Death. So we work hard, we foam at the mouth, we become bewildered, and we die. That is material life. And that's why we're being advised, dharma shahi apavargasya. Take advantage of dharma. Dharma will get you out of this situation. We have some, dharma means a purpose to life. So we have some purpose to life. What is our purpose to life? To get out of this cycle of working hard and foaming at the mouth and dying. So dharma is available to us to do that. Now, unfortunately, we don't, there are many dharmas. That's also described in this verse. Many dharmas are propagated. This is what you should do with your life. But Bhagavatam is recommending parodharma, a dharma, engagements, occupational engagements, which are beyond this material world. It's recommending that kind of dharma, not the kind of dharma that simply results in getting money. It's interesting, we can see the universality of the teachings of the Bhagavatam when it talks about anybody, anywhere in the world, everybody, anywhere in the world is working hard, and they think that religiosity is meant to get material prosperity, isn't it? There's prosperity religions here. Sometimes you see televangelists and others. If you follow the tenets of God, then you'll be able to get money. And the proof of your success and your piety, your religiosity, will be that you have material prosperity. I mean, isn't it? We see that in India, for instance. Again, I was at Balaji. That temple gets, not that the temple is materialistic, but people go there for material gain. You offer a little bit in a hundi, expecting to double your money in result in benedictions. And they get a lot of people that come there with that hope in mind.
Specifically Balaji.
They get, I think somebody said $500,000 a day in donation or something like that. The temple. And we've seen the pictures of how they decorate the deity. So people go there with this idea to get material gain. In Christianity they do it, and in Judaism, all the Islam, all the religions, they have this idea that in this life or the next, you'll get favored if you perform your religiosity. That's how they recruit people for this terrorist activities. That, you know, if you become a suicide bomber, you'll get like 20 virgins in your next life or something. So material gain is driving dharma, what you do. So there are many dharmas, and most of them are based on the idea that if you follow this religiosity, you follow these rules and regulations, that you'll get material gain. But the Bhagavatam, from the very beginning, throws this out. Second verse of Bhagavatam, again, looking back from here. What is it? Dharma shahi. Dharma projika kaitavotra nimatsaranam datam. So it kicks out all these religions which are materially motivated, this idea of getting gain, and replaces it with service to Krishna as being the way to actually achieve the real purpose of life. And so this verse explains dharma should never be performed for material gain. Okay, you may need things. That's another thing. There are two things. There's what you need and what you want. They're two different things. You may need to eat. You may need, but Gurgashir Das Babaji, one of the things he did was he ate mud from the Ganga. So our need to eat may be tempered by what we see and how we associate with these great sages, these great devotees. He ate mud from the Ganges to maintain his life. But not that we're asking to do that. But so you have needs, but try to distinguish between the needs and wants. We don't need to be gluttons. Eating is allowed, especially in our tradition. Prasad is there. Caitanya Mahaprabhu himself, he had a big hand. He would feed prasad to the devotees. They got sufficient amount, so you'll be taken care of in that way. But don't let that be the cause, the driving force, the purpose behind your performing dharma. That's a mistake. Sense gratification is a mistake. You perform your duties as given by the Lord, and He will take care of you. Not that sense gratification should be the goal. Just like when the Lord was advising the demigods when they were churning the ocean of milk, He told them, don't go after the first thing that comes out. Wait for it. Wait for the nectar. It'll come, but it may not be the first thing that comes out. The demons couldn't hear that instruction, so when the churning started, so many things started coming out. And they wanted to take these things, they were coming out from the ocean. But the demigods followed the order of the Lord and waited. Wait for it, it'll come. So they churned and different things came, and then finally the nectar came, which is what they were meant to get. So dharma is like that. We'll get so many things, but we shouldn't jump on them and take them for sense gratification, but rather take our needs and use the rest in the service of the Supreme Lord. If we do this, then we're following this verse of Srimad Bhagavatam and the sages who recommend that the ultimate occupational service should never use material gain to cultivate sense gratification. That won't make us happy, cultivating sense gratification. It'll just put us in this cycle of papa, ba, ma, ma, which we're trying to escape by performing dharma. So, does anybody have any comments or questions about these subjects? Yes.
Just reading the Brahma Samhita the other day, that verse, yad bhava bhavita diyo manujasta taiva samprapya rupa, you know, and it's interesting because it says that person who shows devotion to the Lord, then it says, you know, samprapya rupa, the beauty, how do you say, ornaments, thrones, mahima sanayana bhushaha. So it's just interesting that, you know, kind of a catch-22, like the yukta vairagya aspect of it. How do you balance of, you know, utilizing those things that may come through just not even bhakti? At one time, Mahendra Prabhu, I used to go to his room and we, you know, ask questions and talk, and he said, bhakti, all that comes from bhakti. Mm-hmm. You know, so you know, like you're saying, there's needs, but and then there's even within the needs, there is certain, how do you say, maybe desires from family life that need to be fulfilled, that include sense enjoyment, because grihastha life has that aspect of it, where, you know, the kids, you know, you have to satisfy their desires, this, and, you know, the relationship and everything like that. So how do you balance it where it's not, you know, where, oh, no sense enjoyment, no desires, this, and then maybe it can create some type of friction in the grihastha ashram, which type of requires, in a sense, a little bit of sense enjoyment. So how do you find that balance?
Well, I think that balance becomes dictated to us by experience. It's we know we are performing devotional service, something may come. And the minute we try to enjoy, we get the mercy, don't we? We get slapped upside the head. You know, the minute we step over, and we should understand our life in that way, that the Lord is actively participating in our life. He's there as Paramatma, and He's there to help us. We've already turned to Him. We're already devoting. We've turned to Him. And He won't put us in we're in a situation where we're not even barely getting by. Is that also the mercy of the Lord? The great devotees think that way. Oh, if I had got so many things, I would become spoiled by this, and so therefore the Lord is preventing me from having them. Or if I have so much, then I should, you know, use that to spread Krishna consciousness. There's enough. But the evil is, and it's distinguished from the need, is sense gratification. When it becomes a matter of just gratifying the senses, and that's the thrust of our activity, and then we're stepping over the bounds, and the best result won't happen. The best result, and the best result being that we develop our attachment to Krishna. So we have to be intelligent to watch that, and have grihastha life is also not an isolated affair. We have greater family, we have community, and they can sometimes help us. Particularly now, I think our society has developed. In the beginning, there was no elders, you know, to help, but elders can, again, tell you, well, I think, you know, you're moving this way or that way, that you better watch that, it's not so good. So take advantage of the Society of Devotees, Association of Devotees, and to keep an eye out. You'll know. You know, we all know that, well, this is sense gratification. It's not, it's beyond the necessities of life. Is that all right? Should we come? You speak it.
Haribo. Bhishma Dev was a pure devotee of the Lord. But it still seems like he was baffled when questioned by Draupadi about Dharma. He was saying Dharma is very difficult to ascertain. Why do you think he couldn't have answered her? Clear.
Well, as a pure devotee of the Lord, Bhishma Dev can do anything. But maybe for our benefit, for who are not on that level where we can do anything or understand anything, he may be showing us the nature of Dharma, materialistically motivated Dharma. And we can just take the lesson that Dharma is very hard to ascertain in a particular situation, and not think that I know this, or this is something that's easily understood. It's a serious subject matter that we have to contemplate deeply. Any from the ladies there?
Hare Krishna.
Yes.
Prabhu, you said that we all think we come into this world empty-handed, but we don't. What do you mean by that?
I mean that we have duties. We have duties. We may think we were born in this world and we don't have any obligations to others. We have obligations to others, to the forefathers. In Western civilization, this idea is, you know, if you say that to somebody, forefathers or something else, I think, what are you talking about, forefathers? But any traditional civilization or culture has respect for forefathers and elders. And certainly in the Vedic tradition, we are born with obligations already, not that we just come empty-handed and free. We have obligations, and we should accept them and try to understand what they are. Now, those obligations, in materially, they may be all over the place based on the three modes of material nature and the 24 material elements. They combine together and they perform all kinds of duties, so-called duties. But in the human form of life, we're meant to try to find out what is the ultimate good, and that's what the sages here are discussing. What is the ultimate good? What is the ultimate dharma that you can perform? Because you have to perform something. It's not that we're impersonalist and it's I have no connection with anything or anybody. Mother Sukhara?
Going back to Gaurika Shardas, when you were reading about him, you said that, or he said, not to artificially remember the past times. Not to artificially remember the past times of the Lord. So that, it's like, you remember the past times of the Lord, but you shouldn't do it artificially. So does that mean that, like when we chant, you shouldn't try to like think of the past tense. We should just chant and listen to the mantra. It seems like what he was saying.
I got from that that he was saying, don't prematurely concoct your relationship with the Lord and to try to think your understanding in that way, but wait for actual realization to come. And the example comes to my mind that, with Prabhupada and his disciples, where in Mayapur, a couple of devotees, you know, they heard something somewhere, and that in their spiritual form they were peacocks, and therefore they were in their room, you know, trying to act like peacocks. So. That is an artificial way of trying to understand our relationship. We may be peacocks in the spiritual world, but it's not going to come from some artificial way of trying to be a peacock. Mm. Like that. That's the impression I got.
He said the pastimes of Radha Damodar, and since that's a very delicate relationship of Radha and Krishna, because it says Radha Damodar, just not the pastimes of Krishna, that to try to superficially understand the pastimes of Radha and Krishna is something to be very cautious.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's good too. And I think all these are genuine cautions that we can take from the statement, especially premature trying to understand Radha Krishna Leela. We are, you know, that we understand it. I think that's, at least for myself, it's a little artificial to take that stance. Okay, so we're a little over. Madan, do you have something? Last thing?
I was thinking how Vyasadeva recommended dharma, artha, kama, moksha, that's Lord Chaitanya, he refuted that with Prema Pumarta Mahan, but it was Dharma Artha Kama, and I think he got in trouble for that too. Then his spiritual master said that you have recommended some activities and prohibitions in the name of religion. They're going to take the sense gratification part and hardly care for the prohibition. And since you've encouraged them that way, that's barely condemned.
Yeah, either taking the sense gratification results, or I always understood the interaction between Narada Muni and Vyasadeva that Vyasadeva promoted the ritualistic practices and as if they were an end in themselves, but they're not an end in themselves. So, but people will practice them. He said people will practice them thinking that they're ends in themselves without trying to understand the goal of those activities or what's behind those activities, which is the exclusive devotion to Krishna as explained in Srimad Bhagavatam.
But it seems like the beginning, the spoonful of sugar helps the medicine go down, that
yeah, but this is Kali Yuga, and he says that that's the problem. You're right. That's the prescription of the Vedas in general. But in Kali Yuga, people will take that as an all in all.
Take sugar and only.
Yeah, and they won't get to the other, to the next thing. That was his fear, and that's why he said, write the Bhagavatam, which directly says, worship Krishna.
But that is a byproduct. Generally speaking, if people do religious activities, they become regulated and they become prosperous, and Krishna recommends
it. And they become content also.
Yeah, so there's the problems for that, but it was at a certain stage people were encouraged like that, do sacrifices for the demigods and then you'll be prosperous, general prosperity will reign for everyone. So it was kind of like the bait, I guess, to get someone started, and then they explained to them a little bit more, kicked out all that. That's what the second and third chapter.
Yeah, we have to stay there. We read the second and third chapter.
By the time you got to the 18th Sarva Dharma, give them up.
Okay. Yes? Yes?
You mentioned take as much as we need, not as much as we want. And there is a great example in the life of Gaurakishore Das Babaji. He's so renounced that, I was reading his biography, that he didn't want to be disturbed by external, things. He was sitting by the Ganga River and he was like fishing the dead corpses to just get the clothes on. So he didn't want to waste his time purchasing or, this is an extreme, of course, example, but it's an example of an acharya. So, and also, he didn't allow himself to go to beg ailments, for householders. He was just content, whatever he could find around. That's his sense of renunciation. And he was sitting in places like by the toilets or some places, garbage cans, so people that don't see him don't really see anybody to be disturbed. So that he was in his biography.
Sakshat Vairagya Murte, personification of renunciation. All we can say is that we're very fortunate to be close to him in the parampara and get some little drop of his renunciation. Of course, we may be like, at least I may be like, that man that came to him and he said, I'll give you benediction. Give up everything and just live here with me. And then he just thinks, okay. See you later. He just got up and ran back to Calcutta. Couldn't take it. But, Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj may be kind to all of us. Hare Krishna.